it helped them out with their grades. That word of mouth, I think, is the strongest way to change things. And that's what we've been kind of, our growth of the 5 million users, it's not a government telling someone you have to use Khan Academy. It's not, it's people telling each other, hey, this worked for my neighbor, this worked for my son, you might want to try it.
Right, but if a private initiative, ultimately, I know it's run as a non-for-profit, but ultimately this is a private initiative.
Non-governmental,
Can engage in that kind of activity. Is there a point at which there's a debate to be had about the role someone like you plays in educating children versus the role traditionally played by the state?
That's something I have no real opinion about. I have an opinion of, but to put simply, I think the state will always play a very strong role. I think public education is a very, very powerful thing. I think our role is to show cases where without extra money, with the resources on hand, you're able to move the dial. And if we can show that, and we can show it across use cases, whether it's affluent neighborhoods, underserved neighborhoods, different demographics, different geographies, then I think we will have done our part. And then other people say, well, it's just a matter of do you adopt it or do you not? And especially if we lower all of the barriers to adoption. But I don't think, it's already getting a little political, us giving away free videos, educational videos. I definitely don't think it's even our place to go and say, this is the way public school should be, or this is how it should be funded, or anything like that.
And you view all this in a transnational fashion. I mean, you've spoken about creating the global One World Classroom. Your book is going to be called The One World Schoolhouse. This isn't just about lifting educational standards in one country.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, right now our content is primarily in English, but it's already being used around the world. We're doing translations into Spanish, Portuguese, Mandarin, Hindi, Bengali, top 10 languages of the world, and then we're going to go from there. Our goal for the next year is to localize the site so it's available in all of the world's languages. We've talked to people about how can we introduce more content on the site that could be regional specific, maybe if you want to learn a specific skill in a particular part of the world. So we really want to view this as like an institution for the world so that hopefully in 50 years, access to a world-class education will be like clean drinking water. It'll be, it's not why, it'll be why not. And it'll be ridiculously inexpensive to deliver it to someone in a village that right now has no access to anything. So that is the goal. And I actually think it'll help everybody if we can get there.
Can he get there? Can Salman Khan genuinely create the One World Schoolhouse of his dreams? With Silicon Valley's track record of success and the wind of the information superhighway at his back, he at least thinks he's in with a chance. That's our special Christmas Day edition of FSN Reports. Tomorrow, what role will Russia play globally in 2014? We'll have an extended discussion with the team in the FSN Moscow Bureau. I'm Simon Marks. For everyone with FSN everywhere,
and you're listening to radio station WBAR in New York. Time is 7 o'clock on a Wednesday, and it's Christmas Day. But it's still time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. A Billy Bomb for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. Bundle it, no!
Yes, it's our special skipping mix of the Off the Hook theme. And welcome. This is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by an empty studio. Wow, listen to that. There's nobody here except me. I can't remember the last time that's happened. It's kind of cool. I can say whatever I want, and nobody will refute what I say or agree with what I say, which is even more annoying. Maybe it's an exercise for the astute listener out there to find out when the last time I did a show solo, an Off the Hook show solo here was. It's probably well over 20 years ago. Wow, that's scary. Of course, it's also kind of unique in that it's Christmas Day. I'm here live. I've done shows on Christmas Day before, but usually I'm somewhere else. And I don't recall being here on this particular holiday. So, wow, it's a lot of, and I'll be here New Year's Day too, apparently. So it's history. But you know what? I'm not alone. I'm not completely alone because joining me on the telephone is Bernie S.
Merry Christmas from Pennsylvania, man.
Merry Christmas from New York.
And to all our listeners, Merry Christmas.
Yes, to you and yours, whatever that means. And it's kind of a low key day here in New York. It really is. There's nobody here. Well, there are people around. There's all kinds of tourists roaming the streets. But if you're used to what New York is like on a normal weekday or even weekend, it's like a ghost town. So it's kind of weird and kind of relaxing, kind of cool. What we're going to do tonight is basically sum up a little bit of what's happened this week, maybe even this year, and then we're going to open it up to listeners who can share whatever they're going through today or their thoughts on various other things. Try to just keep it kind of low key and mellow. And I have this took quite a while to load actually, and hopefully it'll still play. I have the Edward Snowden Christmas message that Bernie. I believe you found the URL to this. It's kind of hard to find a working URL because Channel 4 in England is very protective of this. He basically gave a speech after Queen Elizabeth gave her speech. I'm not quite. Is that like the Republican response to Obama's speech whenever he gives one?
Yeah, I think one year Channel 4 broadcast a Christmas alternative message from Ahmed Ahmadinejad. I forget how it pronounces the former president of Iran. But
Ahmadinejad did this.
Snowden to him, but I don't think it's a fair comparison. But
wow.
They have a different message from just different noteworthy people every Christmas as an alternative to the Queen's sort of, staid Christmas message.
Now, when she gives, and I realize you might not know the answer to this, but when she gives her annual message, is it just on Channel 4? Or is it on every single station in England?
I think it's probably carried by more than one media outlet.
Uh-huh.
But this is a specific BBC 4. Not a BBC.
Not BBC.
It's not BBC. It's just Channel 4.
Right.
In England, in Britain. And I think they have chosen to do this alternative thing on their own. But it wasn't produced by them. It was produced by our friend Laura Poitras.
Yes. Who has been very much involved in all this. I got to tell you, there were so many people that really had a good 2013, I think, as far as standing up for what they believe in and doing a really good job and a great public service for us as both as Americans and as humans. And one thing that that Edward Snowden said over the past couple of days was something that George W. Bush also said, but this time I think it really is true, and that's mission accomplished, because he did accomplish the mission of getting this into the conversation, not just here, but everywhere. People are talking about the surveillance state that is amongst us everywhere, how leaders, how individual citizens are being spied upon by this one agency. And this is one guy that was able to expose all of this. Imagine if a bunch of people tried to expose what was actually going on, the good that could come out of that. Of course, the media, which is sad, the media likes to focus on the bad that can come out of it. Which, this is something we've struggled with since our beginnings back in 1984 with 2600. When you expose information, yeah, it can be used for good or for evil. But that's not an excuse to not share the information that you uncover, that you're able to find. And it's, you have to consider it's out there anyway to some degree amongst various people. So it's best that we confront this, we expose it, we analyze it, and we deal with it. And that's what I think 2013 has been all about with these NSA leaks that are continuing.
Absolutely. It's really inspiring how many people have stood up this year, or continue to stand up this year, from Chelsea Manning to Edward Snowden to Jake Applebaum to so many people who are Laura Poitras, so many people who we've known.
Glenn Greenwald, Julian Assange.
Yeah, but people that we have known for years and are now suddenly in the limelight for having stood up for something that they strongly believed in and stuck their necks out at great risk, great personal risk.
Yeah, and there are so many people, too, that we don't hear about, kids, for instance, that basically see things going on around them and say, no, this isn't right. I'm going to tell people about this. I'm going to expose this. Employees and companies, people that might not get the headlines but are still conscientious and very willing to put what's right ahead of what's regulated and what's in their non-disclosure agreements and various things like that. It's tough. You know, it's tough making that decision. It's tough making that sacrifice. When you think of the people that we're discussing right now, what they have gone through over the past few months, what they will go through in the months and years ahead, there are things they've given up as a result of this. I have friends who can no longer come to this country because of their involvement in these projects, but they don't regret doing it because they were in a position where they could help, and they did, and it has made a difference. It's made a huge difference, and we are having the conversation. We are analyzing these things, and we don't know where it's going to go from here. We don't know, but it's going to be a more informed public and probably a public more aware of its privacy. What I would like to do now is attempt to play this. Now, when I clicked on this link, there were all kinds of things I had to agree to, all kinds of cookies that were downloaded. It took 5 minutes to download all that before it even started to play, and hopefully it will play now. This is the Christmas message from Edward Snowden, and hopefully there won't be too many seconds of awkward silence. Let's listen.
Hi, and Merry Christmas. I'm honored to have a chance to speak with you and your family this year. Recently, we learned that our governments, working in concert, have created a system of worldwide mass surveillance, watching everything we do. Great Britain's George Orwell warned us of the danger of this kind of information. The types of collection in the book, microphones and video cameras, TVs that watch us, are nothing compared to what we have available today. We have sensors in our pockets that track us everywhere we go. Think about what this...
Okay, apologize for that. It's buffering.
Hey, Emmanuel.
Yes.
I think I posted to our list the link to SoundCloud where you could download the audio, and I think Rob, who's not with us tonight, but he compiled an MP3 and posted that on our list too. Perhaps you could get a complete audio clip that way.
Well, to do that, I'd either have
for the privacy of the average person. A child born today will grow up with no conception of privacy at all. They'll never know what it means to have a private moment to themselves, an unrecorded, unanalyzed thought. And that's a problem, because...
Okay, as I was saying, Bernie, to do that, this is ridiculous, I'd have to either type my password onto the public computer here, which I'm not going to do, or try to get Wi-Fi working, which is not working on this campus, apparently. I guess what's happening is the whole world is trying to see this video at the same...
Privacy matters. Privacy is what allows us to determine who we are and who we want to be. The conversation occurring today will determine the amount of trust we can place both in the technology that surrounds us and the government that regulates it. Together...
It's only about 30 seconds more, so we're not going to play this little charade much longer. The whole world seems to be trying to get to this video at the same time, so that's why we keep losing the connection.
I'd be interested in knowing how many hits, how many people have downloaded.
We can find a better balance, end mass surveillance, and remind the government that if it really wants to know how we feel, asking is always cheaper than spying. For everyone out there listening, thank you. And Merry Christmas.
Okay, there you go. Well, we got the whole message out there in bits and pieces. I'm sorry for that, folks. But, sometimes you have to sort of piece messages together to get the true meaning, and this is one instance of that. But I'm sure there'll be better copies of that around after today. Any particular surprises in that message, Bernie, that you can see?
I don't think there were any real surprises, but I think it was well written and very concise, and appropriately broadcast from England, where George Orwell lived and wrote from and warned through his novel 1984 about that's why we call it Orwellian society, where the government uses every means possible of electronic surveillance to track us, watch us, listen to us, monitor us, see who we associate with. And what Ed Snowden was saying is that what's going on now is far and above what was described in Orwell's 1984 book, from whether our cell phones in our pockets now being used to track our movements and other things, and to the really scary thought, which we have talked about for a long time on this show, that people, younger people, are being conditioned to accept this as normal, all of this surveillance and lack of privacy. He's saying that a child born today will have, if things keep going as they are, have no concept of personal privacy.
Yes, and that is kind of scary that people are just blithely going around assuming that their location is always going to be something that's publicly known, that they have no real expectation of privacy with their communications, who they speak to, what they say even. I don't think there's a government in the world that does not want a populace that feels that way.
It's a very powerful form of control when people know that their government is or can watch them, listen to them, see where they go, when they go, different places, who they associate with. And that's made possible by this en masse logging of all our communications. None of us are claiming that they're all watching us in real time. That would be impossible. But when the government records all of this information without any probable cause or even reasonable suspicion that we're committing any crimes whatsoever, and they just record everything we do and say and who we communicate with and when and where and travel with, which is all possible with the technologies that they're surveilling, they can go back and build a complete picture of what we're doing. And when people realize, it's a subtle thing, Emmanuel. When people just start to think this is normal, they begin to be more careful about what they say and do and who they associate with and where they go. And that is a very scary thought to me.
Yeah, absolutely. When you start, you're thinking inside your brain in a way that is unhealthy, as far as like, well, I can't associate with this particular person or be in this particular place because it could come back to haunt me in some particular way. And what you say about people just their attitudes changing as they, people who aren't used to the way things used to be, not being aware that we lived in a different society 10, 20 years ago, completely different society. It's very, very true, because that is how these changes happen. They happen slowly, but they happen completely. And there are things now that people are used to, such as, for instance, the ridiculous name of Department of Homeland Security. We laughed when we heard that. It just sounded like something out of a TV show. Now it's something that everybody just accepts. And a lot of the post 9/11 talk that we see on a daily basis, the way people, for instance, just yesterday, I heard this yesterday in a mall. I think it was on Long Island. Somebody dropped something. And of course, people assumed it was gunshots. So the whole mall had to be evacuated. You know, this is a world that we live in now that would have been ridiculous 20 years ago. But people's attitudes change. They don't know anything different. And when kids grow up and they assume that elementary schools are supposed to have armed guards at the entrances, and that any communications they have with their friends or acquaintances are going to be logged and monitored, that's going to be their normal. That's going to be what they consider to be the way things are supposed to be. And if it's not like that, something is wrong. And I think, you know, people like Edward Snowden coming around and saying, yeah, this is what's actually happening, that might be the kick in the head we need to wake us up and say, well, where exactly are we going with this? And for that, I think it's been a really, really good year.
Very much so.
Oh, now this music Actually, Kyle got us this music, and I want to thank him for that. This is, I didn't even know about this, but I recognized it immediately. This is known as the intermission music at the Chaos Congress. So between talks, you can hear this music, and I guess it just sort of gets into your brain because you immediately associate it with Germans filing through hallways and conference centers going from one talk to another. And I wish I was there. Well, it hasn't started yet. It will start the day after tomorrow. But what's cool about this is that you can stream, I think, all the talks. And in fact, I'm planning on attending several talks, which is something I don't usually do when I go to the conference itself, because I'm so busy talking with people and socializing and having adventures in various places. But when you're not there, you can go to their website. I'll give you the address. It's https://events.cc.de/congress/2013/wiki/streams. And you should be able to pick the talk of your choice, including Glenn Greenwald's keynote address, which I believe is on Friday morning in German time. So it's probably Thursday, very late night for us. Bernie, have you ever been to one of the congresses?
I've been to several of them.
That's right, you have. It was a while ago.
Not that recently. It just doesn't work out for my personal schedule. But I wish I was there right now too, because it's an amazing sharing of ideas. Much like Hope, but it's been going on. Is this not the 30th?
This is the 30th. Yeah, it's going to be mayhem and pandemonium because wow, it's a big anniversary. 30 years of this. And it's incredible because it's also 2600's 30th anniversary. A lot happened in 1984, apparently. It was a big year. And it's good to mark these things.
I think it's interesting that one of their keynote speakers is Glenn Greenwald, who it seems like journalists are now, finally, more journalists are finally coming to talk with the hacker community and learn and to share what they know and vice versa, and realize that people like Ed Snowden, who I consider a member of the hacker community, I saw a picture of him today for this interview that it was interviewed for, that we play the audio for today. His laptop had a bumper sticker from the Electronic Frontier Foundation and a sticker for Tor, you know, the Onion Router project that Jake Applebaum is involved with and other folks we know. So those are hallmarks of a hacker. And all of this stuff is interconnecting, and I am really pleased to see a closer working between journalists and documentarians like Laura Poitras, Glenn Greenwald, and the hacker community to get more information out to the public about what's really going on. Because there's a lot the public is not being made aware of, and what Edward Snowden has done is remarkable. It's brilliant. Just sort of dripping these documents out, allowing the journalists to meet these documents out slowly over time. It's got to be like Chinese water torture to governments.
It's a simple thing. It's a simple enough thing to have access to something and to share what you learn with the right people. It's a difficult thing to find the right people. Now, Edward Snowden could have easily gone to the wrong journalist that just would have simply turned him into the government and not done anything with the story. But he went to people that actually would get this, would understand what it was that he was saying. And it took a while too. I know he was trying to get Glenn Greenwald to communicate via PGP. And, you know, we've talked about this before on this show, how kludgy it can be trying to get PGP to work properly. And it's a real pain in the ass sometimes. Fortunately it took a little bit of time, but, he got Glenn Greenwald's attention and was able to get this information to him. And of course, Glenn was able to get it out to the world and continues to, and at great personal risk to him as well. He's been harassed by authorities. His partner's been harassed by authorities. Likely he will continue to be for many years to come. He will be considered an enemy of the state by some of those less evolved people in politics. And we need people like this in the hacker world, in the journalistic world, who know that, sometimes it's not easy. Sometimes you do have to make hard choices. Sometimes you have to sacrifice things that you would rather not have to sacrifice for the greater good, to get the word out, to share the information, to tell the truth. And that's something that I think a lot of people who criticize this don't realize. This is the truth. This is what's happening. And that is supposed to be a good thing. We're supposed to learn about this. We're supposed to know that our privacy is not what we think it is, that both corporations and governments are well into a lot of our lives that we're not aware. We're open for inspection like this. Now, something happened this week that was really kind of interesting, too, and that was the revelation that the NSA paid RSA $10 million to install backdoors into their software. You heard about this, Bernie?
I have, and it's scary. You know, you really begin to wonder, who can we trust? You know, NSA is for a long time been did I say NSA or RSA? It's almost like, who are we talking about here?
Well, they might as well merge at this point.
I know, we should just call it NSRSA or something. But the story is being reported that a piece of software that RSA was releasing used a particular encryption algorithm that was recommended by the National Security Agency.
Yeah.
This is really secure. You should use this. And they made it the primary, reportedly made it the primary default algorithm in this particular piece of secure communication software.
Yeah, according to the story from the Register, the mystery of why RSA would use a flawed NSA-championed algorithm as the default random number generator for several of its encryption products appears to be solved, and the answer is utterly banal if true. The NSA paid it to. Reuters has reported that RSA received $10 million from the NSA in exchange for making the agency-backed dual elliptic curve deterministic random bit generator the preferred random number algorithm, and that's according to newly disclosed documents provided by, guess who, whistleblower Edward Snowden. Now, interesting thing, and they say here, if that figure sounds small, that's because it is. Tech giant EMC acquired RSA for $2.1 billion in 2006. That's around the same time as the backroom NSA deal. So it seems odd that RSA would kowtow to the G-men so cheaply, but according to Reuters, at the time, things weren't looking so good for the division of RSA that was responsible for its B-Safe encryption libraries. That's B-S-A-F-E. In 2005, those tools brought in a mere $27.5 million of RSA's $310 million in annual revenue, or just 8.9%. So by accepting $10 million from the RSA, as Reuters claims, the B-Safe division managed to increase its contribution to RSA's bottom line by more than a third. It wasn't long after RSA switched to dual ECDRBG as its default, that's what we just mentioned, that security experts began to question whether the new algorithm was really all it was cracked up to be. In 2007, a pair of Microsoft researchers observed that the code contained flaws that had the potential to open a perfect backdoor in any encryption that made use of it. And such concerns remain largely within the province of security experts until earlier this year when those documents were leaked. So, I guess the word was out there that this was potentially a problem. But now we know for sure just how that problem came about in the first place. And, wow. I want to say what a shock, but at the same time I want to say I'm not really surprised by this because there's such corruption every place and money talks, and when money doesn't talk, the force of authority certainly does. And it's sad, but it's another eye-opener.
Emmanuel, you may remember way back in the 70s, IBM was developing the data encryption standard, DES, had originally made it a 64-bit, have it a 64-bit key, and the NSA knocked on their door and said, hey, we really want to make this 56 bits because, we should just do it that way. And so DES was watered down by IBM at the behest of the NSA. Who knows if money changed hands? Probably. We'll never really. Maybe we will know. Who knows eventually. But And then I remember back in the '90s, it came out that a secure communications a company called Crypto AG, which manufactured crypto machines used by embassies around the world by various governments, was compromised by NSA, and all the crypto machines were were boogered by the NSA.
Uh-huh.
So this is not a new tactic by the NSA to approach companies, and it's clearly it's much easier for the NSA to corrupt organizations that develop secure communications equipment and software than to crack the encryption itself. We've learned from some of these leaked documents from Ed Snowden from the NSA that the agency has a huge division, Central Security Service, which their job is to infiltrate using moles, individuals to infiltrate these companies to get these back doors installed and so forth, because that's easier and cheaper than actually trying to crack the encryption. I'm sure they're trying to do both, but that's you go for the weakest link in the chain, and it's typically the human link.
That would appear to be so. Now, I want to move on to something else. I think you posted this on our list about the drone survival guide. Is that something that you found?
Yeah, there's a lot of our listeners have been very interested in this private project that an individual created, this free poster, which you can just go to dronesurvivalguide.org. It's this really great big poster. It's kind of referred to as like 21st century bird watching. You know, you can look up and see the silhouettes of these drones and identify them by how they look on this poster. I recommend all our listeners go to dronesurvivalguide.org. You can order a nice printed poster. It's about, about 3 feet by 3 feet, more or less. It's a nice big poster, maybe a couple feet by a couple feet. Or you can download the PDFs in looks like dozens of languages this is translated to. But it's really interesting. It just shows you the silhouettes and profiles of all the known drones, and there's dozens of them from different countries, companies, and it's one way to like know what you're looking at. And it has a few tips on how to avoid drone surveillance, how to hack drones, that sort of thing. I think it's kind of cute. It's not going to save the world, but it brings public awareness, and that's what I'm all for.
Okay. I'd like to give out our phone number, 212-209-2900, for people to call in. We would like to devote time to our listeners' input on this holiday when there's not a lot of people around. And maybe there are folks listening to the radio that would like to share things, especially people in different countries as well that might be listening that might have a better chance of getting through on a day like this. 212-209-2900 is our telephone number, and the calls are already coming in, so let's see who's out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes, it's Tom from the Bronx.
Boy, what a surprise.
Yes. I'd like to say that years ago, there was an experiment done somewhere in Europe where they had one radio station, regular radio, that they had said, well, let's monitor who tunes in to what station, and the country, whoever was helping them with the experiment, went along with it a day or two, and then after the third day, they said, this is totally ridiculous, we're going to stop it right now, and this happened somewhere in Europe.
Okay.
I think it was maybe Eastern Europe or something, I don't know.
Well, the technology has existed for that a long time, Tom. Thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah, but in other words, but could you imagine if I listened to your radio,
mm-hmm.
I mean your station, these finks somewhere have to know what station I'm listening to.
Yes,
and,
it's possible.
And that's another form of being sneaky.
Yeah, there's a company that...